Is the end near for the euro?
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. As Italian borrowing costs reached another record high this morning, European finance ministers are meeting in Brussels. They're trying to figure out a way to avoid a collapse of the euro. The big ideas out there at the moment involve more unity for the 17 member nations. But some think it may all be too little, too late. Johan van Overtveldt has just written a book ominously titled The End of the Euro, and he joins us now from Brussels. Good morning.
Good morning over there.
Well, you write that there are two ways that the European debt crisis can play out, one of which would be that they would form a full-fledged political union, maybe something like the United States of Europe, or the other way, quote, the whole thing unravels.
Exactly. These are the two options that are before us today.
And what do you think is going to happen?
Well, as things stand now, things are moving more and more in the direction of a blown up of the Eurozone.
So lay out your doomsday scenario for us. How would it unravel?
Well, we keep on going with this piecemeal approach, too little, too late. We put together rescue packages for the countries in difficulties, but the costs of these things mount and mount, and at the end of the day, it will be only the German, which is, as a matter of fact, the biggest economy and also the economy with the deepest pockets, that will have to pay the bills. And within 1 or 2 years, that would become too much even for the Germans. And then it will be them who decide to leave the Eurozone.
What is at stake for the global economy if we lose the European Monetary Union as it exists today?
Two scenarios here. If the thing goes down the drain, if I may put it that way, in a chaotic way, that would, of course, put a huge brake on economic growth all over the world. That means also trouble for the United States and certainly for countries like China and India, who both have a lot of export towards this area. The other scenario is, of course, that this breakdown happens relatively smoothly. And then, of course, per definition, the impact on the rest of the world would also be much smoother.
Finally, if your dire situation is to come true, when's it going to happen?
Well, if I would know that, I would be in the Bahamas in a huge summer house on the beach.
Dr. Johan van Overtveldt, author of the book The End of the Euro, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Well, now to New York, where a judge has put the kibosh on a $285 million settlement between Citigroup and the Securities and Exchange Commission. Citi had paid the money to settle fraud charges involving Citi's bets against mortgage-backed securities that its own clients were invested in. But the judge says the deal may not have been fair to taxpayers, and the case should go to trial. Marketplace's New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore joins us now live to discuss. Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Heidi, how unusual is this? How often do these cases end up going to trial?
Almost never. The SEC doesn't have the budget, and the financial firms obviously don't have the inclination. They don't want to face juries, especially when it comes to complex financial issues. So usually when a firm is caught by the SEC, it agrees to pay a fine and then signs an agreement that says it neither admits nor denies the allegations. That's the standard language.
Is that enough of a penalty? Does that end up changing behavior on Wall Street?
Never. The neither admit nor deny agreement the SEC makes are really problematic. It doesn't represent the truth and it doesn't set any standard of behavior. Did they do something wrong or didn't they? We should know. Former Democratic Senator Ted Kaufman put it this way.
How can you have the chutzpah to say, well, I didn't do anything wrong, but I'm paying this $285 million fine? They have to admit their guilt. And I think if they won't admit their guilt, then SEC should go to trial and we should have a trial.
So that goes to the heart of a big question about the financial crisis. Why didn't anyone really go to jail? And the problem is that basically we have no real way of knowing what a financial crime is. Yeah, we have regulations, but whenever anyone's caught, they neither admit nor deny. So we're walking in this blind gray fog where we never have a firm conviction that something really illegal happened.
Marketplace's New York Bureau Chief Heidi Moore. Thanks, Heidi.
Thank you.
And let's do the numbers. Stocks are up in global trading this morning, up about 0.5% in London and up about 2% in Tokyo. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow surged 291 points, or about 2.5%, to close at 11,523.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf. Online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
Now to another interesting decision from China's government. It is banning all advertisements during primetime dramas and movies on Chinese TV starting January 1st. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz reports from Shanghai.
Advertisers in China are a lot like advertisers in the U.S. They choose to fund programming that sells. But what sells in China, says marketing expert Tom Doctoroff, is starting to make government officials uncomfortable.
I think that the leadership has come to the conclusion that advertisers, they're triggering a significant increase in the unacceptable content that is spilling into a traditional family's home.
So far, unacceptable content has meant dating shows and shows like American Idol that ask viewers to vote. Earlier this year, China's government pushed networks to toss away entertainment programming in favor of what it called morally edifying shows. Dr. Off, who heads marketing firm J. Walter Thompson in Shanghai, says these new rules will cause issues for his clients.
I think that people are really going to be panicking. First, when do I get my money back? And second, how do I reallocate my budget?
A few weeks ago, domestic and foreign companies like Volkswagen and Nike paid a record $2.3 billion for the rights to advertise on China's biggest network. It's not yet known whether they'll be able to get that money back. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
And finally, to a man in Vermont who makes T-shirts that say, "Eat more kale." And now he's facing a cease and desist order from the fast food chain Chick-fil-A, which uses the slogan, "Eat more chicken." Chick-fil-A says "Eat more kale" is likely to cause confusion. Yeah, I don't know about you, but I can't count the number of times I've accidentally picked up kale in the supermarket instead of chicken. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
"What is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?"
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.